Welcome to the Xbox Wrap-Up Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Logan, or just Logan, doesn't matter what you want to call me. If you want to call me either, it's fine. We're going to be talking about how PlayStation is just dominating the news cycle right now. There is not a whole lot of news regarding Xbox, except for the big announcement, which was the Halo co-op campaign flight that just got released this week. There's a little bit of news for Destiny players as well as Psychonaut fans, if you're looking into that. We've got some information about the upcoming confirmed games for Xbox Game Pass in August, as well as lots of games that are on sale right now for the Xbox Summer Sale. We're going to be talking about that, as well as how PlayStation has just been absolutely dominating. They've got Stray coming out soon. That's going to be on their Premium Plus, Extra, and PlayStation Plus, Extra, and Premium members are going to have access to that, as well as Ubisoft Plus Classics making its way to the PS Plus, Extra, and Premium. We're also going to be talking about their new loyalty program and how it stacks up compared to Xbox Rewards or Microsoft Rewards. I want to talk about that, as well as just the general idea of how things seem to be going tit for tat for a lot of the consoles right now. It's a pretty dry week as far as news is concerned. There's not a whole lot coming out, but I did get a chance to dive into Power Wash Simulator, I think is what it's called. I had a good time playing that, and I want to talk a little bit about what you can expect if you jump into that, and that is, of course, available on Game Pass. So we got a lot to talk about. Let's get into the news. First off the bat, let's talk about the big announcement for Xbox. The Halo Infinite Campaign Network co-op flight is now live. If you don't know how to get into this, there is a really good article out there, thanks to Brendan Lurie over at Windows Central, who kind of breaks down that you need to head over to Microsoft's Halo's website, the Waypoint, and be able to sign up for their beta. Unfortunately, if you haven't already been signed up for their Halo Infinite Insider program, you're probably going to miss out on this first batch of testing. This is something that I opted into back when they were flighting the multiplayer last August, and I had a really good time with that. I thought that it was in a really good state. And if you're trying to get into it, just make sure that you have all of your information set up. I will tell you that once you get accepted into the actual flight, you'll want to check your notifications, because that's where you'll get your Steam codes. That's where they'll get you information for how you have to go to Xbox Insider's app on your console. Look to see for participating programs regarding the Halo Infinite Campaign Insider app, and then you have to actually download that app. And then once you get that access, then it'll actually allow you to jump into the actual inside build or the flighting build. Obviously, this is something that, as far as I know, hasn't had any kind of restrictions on whether or not you can show it off or stream it, anything like that. But it is definitely going to be alpha and beta kind of content. Don't expect you to be running this software without any kind of bugs. There's definitely going to be bugs, and they definitely want people to leave some feedback for it. This was something that was promised at the beginning of the actual launch almost a year ago. They've had to push it back, and they've had to push it back just because games and making games is a really hard thing to do. They're also doing a lot with this campaign co-op that they've never had to worry about in the past, and they want to make sure that they get it right, which is why they're actually flighting this stuff. I'm glad that they're flighting this. I'm glad that they're trying to make sure that if there are features that players want, or that players want to kind of say whether or not it's good or bad, that they are taking that into account, because this is something that for all intents and purposes is available to anyone. So if you've wanted to try out the Halo Infinite campaign beta, you can do so. You can have up to 4 players, and in a previous episode, I went through the different things that you can actually do as far as replaying missions, collecting skulls, how everyone's progress matters, how you'll always be working on the person who has the least amount of progress, so that way you're not skipping people's story or skipping people's experience through some of the different missions as you're going along. I have not gotten a chance to actually jump into this. It has been a super busy Friday for me, unfortunately, and because of that, I just have not had a chance chance to really jump into this. And funny enough, I'm actually recording instead of playing at the moment. So I'm hoping to get into some campaign co-op this weekend. I'm going to be reaching out to a few people that I know that are going to be flighting it, and just to see if I can get a chance to see what it's like, because I definitely do want to get a chance to jump in there. Plus,
you mind telling me what you're doing on that ship,
sir? Finishing this fight.
We found out that there's a little bit of side news that I'll probably be talking about in Sea of Thieves in the Keelhauled podcast, but we found out that Season 7 is actually getting pushed back. It is no longer going to be released on the 21st of July. It'll be pushed back to August 4th, so a couple weeks there. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity for me to be jumping into Halo campaign co-op to test this, as well as some other stuff that I can't talk about right now, but I am looking forward to seeing how that plays out. And actually, one thing that I can talk about now that I think about it is the World of Warcraft Dragonflight beta, or alpha, I guess. I got into the alpha thanks to the friends and family thing, so I've been playing that and testing out how that's going to go. But overall, I've been spending most of my time in Sea of Thieves and in Destiny 2. Those are kind of my two go-tos. So I'm looking forward to hearing what people think of Halo Infinite's campaign co-op. This is a feature that I know a lot of fans are looking forward to trying out. And I'm very curious to see just how it's implemented. You know, can you start adding in skulls? What missions do people really kind of gravitate towards as you can kind of go back and replay them? When they had their stream to kind of showcase what was going on, this was done on Thursday, one of the things that I didn't realize from the actual blog post that they put out regarding the flighting was that with missions, you can always replay a mission. That's never an issue. You can go back to a previous mission that you've completed and you can replay it. But halfway through that, if you decide you're done and you don't want to, and you just want to get back to the current progress that you were working on, you can actually do though. You can actually head over to your TAC map and take a look at the mission that was the one that was the most recently active one and re-enable that. It will then take you out and actually send you back to where you were so you can keep working on the campaign. So if there was a mission and you thought, you know what, we forgot to get a skull in that one mission, why don't we head back there and do it? You can run in through that mission, get to the point where you get the skull, grab the skull, and then go back to your current progress in the actual campaign. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people really thought about. A lot of people figured that you could probably replay missions, but you would just have to choose the latest mission and start it over from scratch. I'm really glad that they're doing this. I'm very surprised at just how in-depth this actual campaign co-op seems to be. So shout out to the crew over there who've been working hard to try and get this out. I know that it's definitely coming out later than they wanted, but you know, some things are good enough to wait for. While I usually save the Sea of Thieves news for my other podcast, Keelhauled, I figured I'd touch base on it here in case anyone was listening to this as an Xbox fan and wondered how come I wasn't talking about this. But Season 7 is delayed. If you don't know, this is the Captains of Adventure update. This is the one where they're bringing Captaincy, a long sought after feature that was originally teased before the game's launch. This is a way for you to get a ship and be able to buy a ship so that your ship is your ship. You get to customize it however you want, and you get to set up a loadout for that customization. Alongside being able to buy your own ship and name it, you're also going to be able to progress through a system that will allow you to unlock different types of cosmetics to help kind of decorate your ship so that your ship doesn't look quite as bare compared to every other ship. You can actually put some pretty interesting ornate stuff given some of the videos that we've seen. Unfortunately, with development, like I mentioned with Halo, it is tough. It is always tough, and they always want to put out the best and most stable product possible. And because of that, they wanted to make sure that they had a couple extra weeks to take care of some bigger bugs that they think might be impacting the actual gameplay for the launch of Season 7. So they decided, instead of opening up Season 7 and not having their flagship update at launch, they figured they would push back for a couple weeks. And being that there won't be an episode of the Xbox wrap-up next week due to me being traveling, I'm going to be going to SOT Fest, which is the kind of community-driven event that's going to be going on, unfortunately, right at the same time as San Diego Comic-Con, but I'd much rather be going to SOT Fest in this case. And I'll be there kind of showcasing the game. I'll be kind of hanging out with community members and spending time with them. We're also going to be recording a live episode of Keelhauled there. So anyone that's going to be there can answer questions or ask questions and get them answered for the actual panel. And just genuinely very excited. But the fact that it was going to release next week and the fact that it's now pushed back until August 4th is a big relief for me, because for one, I feel like I'll be happier knowing that the game has had some extra time to polish, and also that the game will be something that I can actually play, as opposed to I won't be able to, given that I don't have a Steam Deck. There's actually been some really interesting conversation going on about the Steam Deck. I've been listening to a few podcasts here and there from Xbox kind of talking about the Steam Deck. Everyone seems to be getting their hands on one. I'm not a huge Steam player. I usually don't use that service for a whole lot, believe it or not, even though I do a lot of PC gaming. A lot of my PC gaming tends to be through the Battle.net app, so that's usually where a lot of that goes. For some reason, I have a hard time playing through like action adventure games on a PC. I don't know why. I just don't feel like it's the right place to play them. So I typically reserve those for consoles. Even though I have like controllers, I could just hook up and it would be the same experience. Something about sitting in my office where I do podcasting and stuff, it's kind of odd nowadays, especially when I've got such nice consoles all around the house. It feels weird. But that being said, I'm still very interested in a Steam Deck. It's not something that I really considered as an option, because I don't have a whole lot of content through there. But one of the questions, or one of the requests that has been going around from different podcasts, is the Xbox app and having a native version of that app available for the Steam Deck. And the question keeps coming up, should Microsoft do that, or should they make their own personal handheld? Now, we know that there is like a streaming stick that they're working on that they've admitted to, but they just don't have it ready. We know that Samsung TVs are getting piloted for the Xbox app natively, so that you can actually play just straight through your TV using a Bluetooth controller. So it's not too far-fetched to think that eventually the Steam Deck will have a native version. Now, you can already play a large number of Xbox-published games or Microsoft-published games on Steam and through the Steam Deck. A lot of those have been pushed over there. The trouble comes in is that you don't have access to those if you're paying for Game Pass, especially when you have PC Game Pass as a perfect alternative to the console version. The PC Game Pass allows you to play a lot of those first-party games through your PC. And many of us just have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which essentially is just having access to both. So it really does come down to, if Microsoft wants to kind of take advantage of the Steam Deck, if they don't want to have to put in the work to make their own handheld, but they do want a competitor in the handheld market, adding a app that is a native Game Pass app would be perfect, because you can still buy almost every single game that is done by third party through Steam. In fact, most people typically do. In fact, most streamers usually do, which is very interesting to me, because a lot of them have been very happy with the Steam Deck. I try not to double dip on games, and especially with Game Pass, I've been trained to wait, and typically I can wait. So having something on Steam where I've already got it on another console or another ecosystem really doesn't really sell me that much, especially when I haven't invested that much in Steam. So I'm hoping that there will be something that will be like a native app for Game Pass, because if that's the case, then I would happily pick up a Steam Deck so that I could actually play a lot of the games that I'm used to playing either through PC or console, or even just cloud play. And you may be wondering, you know, why don't I use my phone in this case? And truth be told, is I don't go out enough to justify it, which really isn't a good enough answer for me to have a Steam Deck, but generally when I have a dedicated handheld or a dedicated console, I'm a lot more inclined to use that as opposed to my phone. Given latency and pairing and ease of access, while I have my phone, I don't like to use my phone all that much. I'm on the computer already, I'm on the controllers for the consoles, and I just don't really feel like jumping onto my phone at the end of the day, especially when I'm sitting around really nice, you know, systems and I've got nice big TVs and my eyesight is not that great. So if I had my druthers, I'd probably play on the bigger screens because it's just a little more ease of access, a little better on my eyes. Plus, it's a lot more comfy just to kind of sit down on the couch and jump on those. But I do have that trip coming up, so I've been thinking about, like, what am I going to do to keep myself entertained? And while I have a vast number of books I can listen to, I've actually been holding on to Pokemon Pearl or Diamond. I can't remember which one I picked up, but I picked up one of the last year's Pokemon games for $30. And I'm probably going to play through that on the flight, because at least with that and a battery pack, I can probably spend a good amount of time using those as opposed to my phone battery, which I know I will probably end up using for, like, listening to books or podcasts throughout the flight. And it's going to be a long flight, so I know I'm going to need a lot to keep me busy. Speaking of things that have been keeping me busy, let's talk about Power Wash Simulator. This is a game that just came out on Xbox Game Pass as well as PC on the 14th, and a lot of people have been talking about it and whether or not it's something you should be spending your time with. A lot of people are saying, yes, it's definitely worth it, but I definitely think that this is what I would probably consider an indie game. It is a simulator. You are a person who owns a power washing company. You don't really focus on that. A lot of your jobs and tasks are just kind of going around from job to job, cleaning up the rest of the environment. And this ranges anywhere from excavation sites where you're having to clean off statues to full houses, as well as playgrounds, things like that, motorcycles, vans, all kinds of things that you can use your power washer equipment on. You have three different types of guns. You have two or three different types of attachments and different nozzles that you'll use to change the angle, the extension as far as like how far you can go with the tighter angle, so that way you can get more pressure on harder to get grime. Obviously, the better the gun, the quicker the grime is going to come off. And this is definitely one of those games where you're going to be wandering around just kind of moving dirt off of objects. It is satisfying in the sense that you're kind of cleaning things up and you get to see that process. The thing that I think is really interesting about this is that it has a story mode that you can actually go through. There is a career. I'm working on it right now. And there's also a simulator kind of co-op, an online co-op that you can play with. You do have a free-to-play mode where you can play with up to six players. But you can also just do this as a co-op campaign mode as well, too. You will need to have an invite code if you decide to go cross-play with this. So just be forewarned about that. It's a pretty quick install, and I spent about 3 or 4 hours on it yesterday, just kind of going through the paces. I will say that after that amount of time, I definitely got pretty tired. And it was one of those things where I was just trying to get the playground that I was working on done so I could be finished with it. Because really the thing that was driving me was getting more gold. Money. I was trying to get more money so that I could upgrade my gun. And once I got that, I wanted to test it out a little bit, and it didn't feel like terribly different. It felt better, but it wasn't like the most amazing experience. It didn't feel like a groundbreaking thing. And that's kind of what this game is. It's not groundbreaking. It does feel satisfying. You're going to have a good time with it for a little bit, but I don't see people really wanting to spend a long, long time on this, especially on the same job. Now, you can switch between jobs if you desire, and there are different skins for your guns and equipment. If you don't want to look at the same looking thing all the time, you can pick those up. But if you're using your gold for that, or not gold, I don't know why I keep saying gold. Sea of Thieves on the brain. But if you want to use your money for that, then you can. But I found myself just wanting to push and push to get more equipment or add-ons, different things. I haven't played around a lot with the soaps, but apparently the soaps are supposed to be pretty good to help kind of break down some of the dirt and grime that you're going to be using. And there's different materials that you can get soap for. So like I went to go to do a playground. I bought some soap that's good against plastic and I tried using it and it didn't really do a whole lot. So I don't know what the goal of that. Maybe I missed some of the things about that. But the thing that was kind of nice was that at the end of each of the different jobs that you're working on, there's a little video, which is kind of like a time lapse of you kind of working on the entire job, and you get to watch yourself kind of go around and clean up all the grime off of the different objects that you'll be working on. And that was actually something that I actually really liked. I liked having that kind of time lapse video that showed what was going on. This game is right up my alley. I love watching videos where people are cleaning up either old retro systems or they're cleaning up lawns. For some reason, that's something that really appeals to me, but I like being the consumer of that as opposed to being in charge of that. I like watching other people do the hard work and me getting to see the end result, because at least on like a YouTube video, I can kind of scrub through towards the very end if I got bored with the way they're making the video. But this is one that I think that because it's on Game Pass, it's probably worth jumping onto, especially given the size of the download. It's not very big, and you can probably jump in and get an idea of what you think of it. For those of you that didn't think that this was something you were going to really get a kick out of, you'd be surprised. And for those of you that have tried it and already know that it's not your bag, then this is no money off of your it's no money out of your pocket because it's on Game Pass, and hopefully that's where you're playing it. It is available out there for purchase. I believe it's $30, but I would really just recommend taking advantage of the service and kind of playing it through that way. So with all that being said, let's dive into the PlayStation news this week. We had a really interesting announcement. If you guys don't know, PlayStation Plus has been making long strides forward with their PS Plus program that launched or was kind of relaunched in June. So as of July 13th, PlayStation Plus game catalog for lineup now includes Stray as well as Final Fantasy VII Remake Integrate, which is the one that has a little bit of additional content to the remake, as well as Marvel's Avengers, which was recently brought to Game Pass. They're also bringing a bunch of Ubisoft games from Ubisoft Plus Classics for PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium members. You can now play some of the different games like the Ezio Collection, which is two Brotherhood and Revelations. You can also play Black Flag, Unity, and Rogue Remastered from that lineup. So they're looking to try and bring more of the Ubisoft Plus games to the service to try and bolster some of the catalog that's available. So on top of that, I mentioned again that we're going to be getting Stray, which is going to be a day one exclusive over on PlayStation. I don't know if it's actually a timed exclusive or if it's just a regular exclusive, but Stray is that cat game that takes place in a cyberpunk future where you have to go around and do tasks or communicate with robots. And we don't really know too much outside of that, but there's been some interesting videos. It's coming out on the 19th, and I do plan on checking that out. If you didn't pick up Final Fantasy VII Remake as one of the PS Plus games recently, then if you're a PS Plus Extra or Premium, I'm trying to remember what the stupid services are called, then you'll have access to the latest content update for Final Fantasy VII Remake, which has not only the PS5 features as well as the extra Yuffie update, which I don't know too much about because I've never played Final Fantasy VII, so I'm barely remembering those characters as it is. I seriously just know them from other people talking to them. But they are planning on bringing another service to PlayStation. They're working on bringing something that is kind of like Microsoft Rewards. I don't know if I would say it's exactly Microsoft Rewards, but the wording here suggests that the possibility is there. So they're introducing a new program called PlayStation Stars. This is a loyalty program that is free for anyone to join that is coming out later this year. Once you become a member, you'll earn rewards by completing a variety of campaigns. These campaigns are what they're calling missions and activities. Our monthly check-in campaign simply requires you to play any game to receive a reward, while other campaigns require you to win tournaments, earn specific trophies, or even be the first player to platinum a blockbuster title in your local time zone. Something that sounds similar to what Microsoft Rewards does, you know, that you have the monthly check-ins that are accumulated weekly and daily tasks. They have specific games they want you to check out and play to receive points. Those points can then be used to either purchase items, get currency for games. You can use them to enter into sweepstakes. You can use them to donate to different charities. All of those kind of wrapped up within the Microsoft Rewards programs, but it extends beyond just the Xbox. You can do this on PC or through Bing on your mobile phone as well, too. They literally try to do anything to try and keep you within the ecosystem, something that Microsoft has done for decades at this point. So that's kind of where the similarities lie. They want you to be actively engaged in the ecosystem with PlayStation Stars. All PlayStation Stars members will have an opportunity to earn loyalty points. Points can be redeemed in a catalog that may include PSN wallet funds and select PlayStation Store products. So that's kind of where a lot of the comparison comes into play, is being able to get cash to use for products in their stores, as well as physical products that you can purchase from their PlayStation Store. As an additional benefit, PlayStation Plus members enrolled in PlayStation Stars automatically earn points for purchases on PlayStation Store. So that's kind of, again, where they are looking at the comparisons. With Game Pass, when you are a Game Pass Ultimate player, any purchases that you make through the Microsoft Store, you get a 10% discount on, including currencies. So that's just one of those things. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I can't remember if it's on currencies. I'm pretty sure it's on currencies. I'm pretty sure I've saved money on currencies through Xbox Rewards or Microsoft Rewards, thanks to Game Pass Ultimate. So they are essentially taking what Microsoft Rewards is and the benefits as a result of Game Pass, and they are turning it into PlayStation Stars with benefits from PlayStation Plus members. And I'm fine with this because I am a PlayStation Plus member. I want to save money on PlayStation games. I want to be rewarded when I play PlayStation games. And it will definitely help keep me involved if I can find games that I have or have access to through extra or premium and be able to earn points through those. It's one of the things I really love about Game Pass. So I'm excited to see that they are finally doing a program that will make PlayStation fans feel rewarded whenever they're playing games by staying within that ecosystem. As I am part of that ecosystem, I enjoy the ability to do that. And it has been something that I think PlayStation has missed for a very long time. In fact, the hardware has been on par with Xbox this generation. Both of them have slight differences between the actual hardware. Say like the Series X has more power when it comes to pushing out resolution and frame rate, whereas Sony is better with, I would say, ray tracing and hard drive speeds, like load times. Anytime I've watched any of the Digital Foundry stuff, it's literally like a half a dozen of one and six of another. You know, they're pretty much equal when it comes to hardware. It really does come down to the games. And the games are great on PlayStation. If you love those action adventure first person campaign story games, the third party content tends to pick up a lot of the slack for the multiplayer content, but a lot of PlayStation fans already know that, and a majority of PlayStation fans are probably more like casual gamers, where you're going to be playing some of the major free-to-play games like Fortnite, Warzone, Apex Legends, games of that ilk. So now that we're getting the PlayStation Stars program, we'll finally have a little more parity between the consoles when it comes to actual services. PlayStation Plus is trying to build their catalog and try and offer gamers an opportunity to play games that are part of the PlayStation catalog from past generations of consoles. Since they don't have backwards compatibility, this is going to be the best offering. Now, I'm not going to say that it's quite up to par with what Xbox offers, because I think Xbox backwards compatibility being base intrinsic to the actual hardware is a way better solution than locking it behind PlayStation Plus. I think that that's still a miss on Sony's side. I think they need to really take a look at how you can make it easy for gamers to play games from past generations. If they have a CD drive, just have the emulation built into the software for the actual hardware for the console. So that way, if you put in a PS2 game, it recognizes it, it boots up an emulator, and you can play it off of that. Just it, like, that's got to get figured out at some point, because I really do think that physical fans are really kind of missing out on that aspect of having a PS5. It should be the most powerful. If it's the most powerful, then let people have access to those games from past generations the way Xbox does. I love being able to throw an original Xbox game into my Xbox Series X and have a 90% chance that it will actually work, with licensed content probably being the biggest outlier. Like, I can't play any of the Bond games from 360 on my Series X due to licensing. So with this, they did mention there were some additional things that I wanted to touch on. Also, as part of PlayStation Stars, we are unveiling the new type of reward called digital collectibles. Collectibles are as diverse as our portfolio of products and franchises. They are digital representations of things that PlayStation fans enjoy, including figurines of beloved and iconic characters from games and other forms of entertainment, as well as cherished devices that tap into Sony's history of innovation. There will always be a new collectible to earn and ultra-rare collectibles to strive for, or something surprising to collect just for fun. Now, a little caveat to this, they have come out and stated that these are not intended to be NFTs. There's no blockchain associated with them, and you shouldn't expect that. These are going to be something that is widely available for people who earn these collectibles through the routes that they've designated, but these are not something tied to a value that will need to be traded or have anything associated with NFTs in that. They haven't mentioned anything as far as like how these are actually going to be displayed or how you're going to be doing that. I know with Xbox, a lot of that goes to your avatar and being able to access your avatar and edit it so that you can put cosmetics on there. So it'll be interesting to kind of see like how this plays out for PlayStation. Currently with the PlayStation 5, there's no themes because the themes are tied to whatever the game is. So whatever game you currently have selected on the PS5, it will have a nice, big, beautiful background of it and some music from the game while you kind of decide on whether or not you wanting to do that. But that doesn't really serve the fans that have a specific game that they love. I loved on my PS4 being able to have two different themes that I tended to swap between. I had my God of War one and I had my Ghost of Tsushima one. And those two were satisfying enough for me to be able to do. I love having themes on my 3DS when I do pick that up and I open it up. It's almost greeting me with, it's always greeting me with almost always a Legend of Zelda theme. And it's set up so that it cycles, so that it's never the same thing twice. So I'm hoping that they do something cool with the digital collectibles. It would be weird if it was just trophies. I can understand that, but it would be really kind of weird unless you had like a whole kind of display case. But even then, like, I don't even understand like how that's going to work. We're talking like metaverse kind of stuff at this point, which sounds cool and may be something that they tie into their PSVR 2, because we really don't know a whole lot about the PSVR 2. But if they are planning on digital collectibles, typically a lot of collectibles need to be on display. So who are you going to show these off to if it's all done on your console? And I think that using a PSVR 2 would be a perfect opportunity for them to tie in your home, your basement, where all your consoles and your games are represented through digital collectibles. And you can hang out in your basement with your VR 2 goggles and you can walk around and invite people into it and show it off. If that was a thing. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how this plays out, how people will receive it. I think the major thing here is just that they are finally offering a loyalty program that looks on paper better than what currently is being offered for Switch. You still have to purchase games to get gold coins. Those gold coins expire. And it's not a good system because you're only getting maybe 10%, maybe 5 to 10% of the value of the game when you purchase it. And then to not have that like last in perpetuity. Like, come on, guys. Like, I get that you're trying to incentivize people to use the coins to buy them, but maybe they want to actually save it up. But if they don't find a game that's worth buying and they're trying to save that up, if they start losing gold coins, that's terrible. So hopefully that's an error on Nintendo's part that Sony can avoid. It's definitely something that Microsoft fans don't have to worry about, as far as I'm aware of. And as we kind of move later into this year, I gotta say, PlayStation really, really has been stepping it up. Their hardware's been on point outside of the actual design. I think they've got a really good thing going for PSVR 2 whenever we hear more about that, probably in 2023. I thought it was going to be 2022, but I guess not. And of course, we've got games like God of War coming up and a bunch of other titles that they're looking to release in the coming future that will be really, really big for the console. It's just nice to see that they're bringing a little more parity with their services, because they've been so lacking in that field. And Xbox has been dominating for so long with that, that it's nice to see them kind of crib some of the notes from Xbox to be able to apply towards the PlayStation ecosystem. Reward those gamers, they need it. All right, so I think the last story that I want to cover now deals with gaming and game prices. There's been an interesting discussion on both sides of the fence, whether you're a PlayStation fan or an Xbox fan, that is kind of talking about what is the value of games. And while that seems to be a very nebulous thing for most folks, a lot of folks think that, and not to be unkind to them, but they think that $70 is too much for a game. I would lump myself in that for the most part. There are some exceptions, but I do think that most games probably are still worth about $60. And I have a little bit of reasoning behind that. If you look at the industry has been operating off of $60 for a very, very long time. They have been adding microtransactions and season passes to games that have full box prices to them, even though the price for games has not gone up. So they found a way to supplement it, and they found a way to maintain a healthy post-launch revenue stream through those avenues. And I tend to prefer those a lot more, because when you're buying a game, you don't know what you're getting into. You may like it, you may not like it. And asking for a larger upfront price is kind of a barrier to entry. I would much rather, and if you take a look at mobile games are a perfect example of this. So you get a mobile game is going to be free, and then they ask you to pay for stuff afterwards, which I'm totally fine with, because I can decide how much is how much time or effort or how much enjoyment did I get out of this game, and how much am I willing to spend on it? How much time do I see myself spending in the future on this? When it comes to games like Destiny and Sea of Thieves, I'm willing to put a lot of money into those, because those games have given me countless hours. Well, not countless. They've given me a lot of hours of enjoyment. So when I look at games like Psychonauts 2, which is getting a physical release starting September 27th, and that's being brought to us by Skybound Games, that is going to be released physically for $70. And a lot of people are wondering why $70 for Psychonauts 2, which is a Double Fine game, which is owned by Microsoft, who publishes games at $60. But this is not the only game that releases at $70. If we take a look at PlayStation, PlayStation first-party titles all launch on their next-gen console, the PS5, at $70. And a lot of questions have been coming up about The Last of Us Part 1, which is a remake of a remake. They are porting everything from The Last of Us 1 and, well, not really porting. Porting is probably a bad word. They are taking the entire game of Last of Us 1 and remaking it in the engine of Last of Us 2. So the character models are going to look different. The worlds are going to look different. The gameplay, the actual controls are going to be different. The accessibility options are going to be different. Everything about this game, outside of the fact that it is a pre-made game, is going to be different. And this is kind of what films do. Films typically take a story that is known or a film that has been done, and they will go and they will remake that film. All new actors, all new sets, all new graphics, all new production. Everything about that is new except for what most people would consider to be the bare story. A lot of the dialogue will actually be the same, but some of it might change. And most people probably don't have a problem going back and actually watching those films. Those films generally hold up a lot better than video games, unfortunately, because of the medium. But not, you know, no one's like sitting there looking at films and thinking like, oh, I can't believe they remade this film. Well, no, I take that back. A lot of people do that, but it's a lot more accepted in the film industry. In fact, most people will probably say that the film industry is out of ideas, which I disagree with, but I just don't think that the ideas people want to see are the ideas that people are looking for are not in the films that people want to see. A lot of the films that have really interesting ideas are what would be considered like art house films nowadays. And it's kind of a bummer because I would say that superhero films and just kind of general kind of like big blockbuster films have become such the norm that you really can't make a film that would normally be considered a regular film without it being perceived as like an art house film. And that's kind of a shame. You're seeing this with video games. The AA games have all disappeared. You know, you don't have the mid-range games as much. Most of those are now indie games. And the indie games are a wide breadth of different types of games. And most of those aren't going to cost you $70. So when you look at games like Psychonauts 2, which is a AAA game, it is being made by Double Fine. It's being published by Skybound Games. And you wonder, why is it $70? A lot of it comes down to who is publishing the game. And with Sony, they have decided that they are going to be releasing their games for next-gen consoles at $70. God of War, Horizon Forbidden West, Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man was a special case, but I think that was because the Spider-Man Miles Morales edition with the Spider-Man remaster was $70, which is why they justified that price. But if you look at Returnal, if you look at Demon's Souls, if you look at Bugsnax, which it was available post the PS Plus offering back when the first month when the PlayStation 5 was available and no one could get one, those games all came out at $70. And the big difference here is that the companies that are releasing $70 games typically are either Sony or third-party publishers. Nintendo is still releasing their games at $60. Microsoft is still releasing their games at $60. So at the moment, I don't see a huge push for games to be made at $70, especially when that is the barrier to entry. Most games, you don't know what they're going to be like. You can watch videos, you can watch streamers, you can watch YouTube's coverage of it for Let's Plays, things like that. And that is great if it's a movie. You can consume that content easily. With games, you never really know if it's going to catch you. You have a pretty good idea, which is generally when most people will jump into a game. But there's been plenty of games that have been widely regarded as really good games, especially after a bunch of updates. I'll take No Man's Sky for example. I have tried to play No Man's Sky at least 5 times. And every time I boot it up, every time I start, I get to the point where I'm finally at the finishing tutorial. I've built a small little base and I've got a refinery. I've got the survival things that I need. And I get out to the big space station, which I don't know what it's called. And at that point, I'm pretty fatigued. And it could just be that's the trial, that's the thing that is holding me up, is I have to get past the trial before I have a little more freedom on what I want to do. But that game is something that a lot of people really love. And a lot of people think that game is fantastic. But for whatever reason, I just can't get into that. So had I gone and spent at the time, $60 for the game at launch, I would have been very disappointed with what I had. I wouldn't have enjoyed it. In fact, I probably have a bunch of those games sitting around right now. Games that I've probably spent somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 hours, but have probably spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 to $50, maybe even $60 at the get-go. And I didn't like them, which is why I enjoy things like Game Pass and PS Plus so much. Those are easy ways for me to spend a small amount of money each month, but have access to a large library of games that I wouldn't feel like spending money on. So I don't know why I can understand why the industry wants to move forward with $70. It's an easy way to guarantee additional revenue stream per purchase of your game, especially when you don't have a whole lot of microtransactions in your games, which a lot of first-party Sony games don't have. That's going to be changing, which calls into question the justification for the $70 price point, when the rest of the industry outside of third-party manufacturers or publishers aren't going forward with the $70 price point. It still makes me question, what is the justification for it outside of these games take a lot of money to produce? And I'm like, that's great. That doesn't mean that the developers are getting that money. That doesn't mean the developers are having less crunch. It just means that the business is earning more money off of the backs of people who are willing to work for subpar pay, things like that. Not to say that everyone is getting paid less than what they deserve. A lot of people are getting paid what they want, and they're happy with that. But I don't see how the $10 that I'm spending for a $60 game on a next-gen console is directly going to the developers. I've seen some arguments from devs who have said that, you know, if people bought games at full price, I'd be able to make more games. And to that argument, I agree, but that's not, you know, it should be up to the strength of the game. If the game is fantastic, then people will buy it. Look at Elden Ring. That game, to me, looks okay. It doesn't look amazing. It doesn't look like next gen. But it is a game that everyone loves. Everyone thinks is probably one of the best games ever made, especially for what's been offered this year. And as such, that game was in the running for a lot of Game of the Year conversations that are happening right now. That game you could justify as something that people will buy at full price because it's just that good of a game. If your game is not in that conversation and you're asking full price, then you have to question what was the game that you wanted to make. And that's a pretty harsh thing to say, I know, but that is how I feel about this. I have a ton of PS4 games that I purchased, and every single one of those, with the exception of maybe, now let me think here, I don't want to be wrong about that, I would say two games are games that I purchased relatively close to the launch that were still, that were full price. Ghost of Tsushima's one of the games that I bought day one. And I just picked up God of War on pre-order, which I usually don't do, but I know I'm going to play it regardless, so I'm not worried about the price, and I want to play it as soon as possible. And then I would say Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart is something that I picked up. But even that was one that I picked up on sale, I think for like $40. But every other game that I've purchased for my PlayStation has been less than $20. And that's kind of my barrier to entry with PlayStation, because it's not my main console. Xbox is my main console. So I'm much more willing to pay full price for games on Xbox. Also, just to the fact that most of those games are probably going to come to Game Pass, so I don't have to worry about that. And that they are still $60. That is a choice for me. So when I look at some of the great games that are made available through PS Plus Premium and Extra, and I see a lot of those first year PlayStation 5 games that were available at $70, it really makes me start to question, were they justifying their $70 price point? This game is now available for $15 a month if I want to play it. And I can go a lot of months before I hit 70 on that, which is a great deal for the customers. I'm not going to say like they shouldn't be doing that, but I will say that it is definitely one of those situations where if you're going to charge $70, it had better be a fantastic experience, because I don't typically buy games at 60, and I really don't buy games at 70. And I would much rather spend somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 30, and I will always be willing to wait for them to drop down to 20 or 15. Speaking of really good deals, we now have 500 plus games in the Xbox Summer Sale this month. This is an article that I'm going to be pulling from to get some of the news. Major Nelson always puts out the full list of deals and roundups on the Xbox website. I figured I'd go ahead and go to purexbox.com to kind of see like what they had done. Fraser Gilbert wrote up an article yesterday that says that Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Ragnarok Edition are respectively $24 and $45, depending on what edition you want. Great deal there. I think I paid full price for Assassin's Creed Valhalla because I was reviewing it. And that is definitely one of those games that I wish I had waited. Why? Because it's a Ubisoft game and Ubisoft games always go down in price. Back 4 Blood is $26.99. Balan Wonderworld, do not buy this game. It's tempting at $12 to see how bad it is, but do not buy that game. Same thing with Battlefield 2042, which is on sale for $35. That is not worth it. That was a $70 game with no campaign, and they've stopped development on most of it. Borderlands 3 is $15. That's a decent deal. Call of Duty Vanguard Cross-Gen Bundle is $35. Another game that I would not recommend given the price. Control Ultimate Edition, which is the next-gen version of the game. Oh, dropping my pen I'm playing with. That is $12. That is a good deal. Pick up Control. Play that game. Diablo 2 Resurrected, $24. If you haven't picked this up already, I would hold off. Because genuinely, I do think that when the Activision Blizzard deal goes through, a lot of their first-party games are going to be going to Game Pass. And Diablo is one of those ones that is on console and available for Game Pass in my mind. You've also got Doom Eternal, The Ancient Gods Part 2, which is the second part of the DLC for Doom Eternal, which is available on Game Pass. That is $9.99. So for $10, you can pick up the last half of the the DLC for that. Dying Light 2, which launched this year, I believe, is $40 if you want. That's available. And I've seen some deals where I think I've seen it cheaper on physical as well, too, after Prime Day. You've also got games like Grand Theft Auto, which is the next gen version for $30. GTA, the trilogy, the definitive edition is $38.99. I would hold off on that. That is definitely going to be cheaper in the long run. And they've done a lot of work to go back and actually work on that. Sadly, we found out that they canceled versions of Red Dead Remake and GTA 5 Remake, I think. They're working on those, and they decided to scrap them, given the feedback from GTA the Trilogy release. And that was most of them. I would say Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, $45. I would recommend holding off on that. That's one of the ones that I picked up Did I pick that one day up? I can't remember. Anyway, and then Mass Effect Legendary Edition, which is also on Game Pass, that is available for $24.99. I did buy that full price. I wish I hadn't, because now I have access to it through Game Pass, and I still haven't gone back to play through all of Mass Effect 1 to get me to Mass Effect 2. Speaking of Psychonauts, Psychonauts 2, also on Game Pass, is available to purchase for $30 if you really want that. And then Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, if you haven't been playing Elden Ring, or if you beat Elden Ring and you want something else, that is available for the Game of the Year edition for $30 as well. Tales of Arise cross-gen bundle is $36. I will say that I did play the demo of that. That's available. That is one that is, it's going to depend on if you're a fan of action JRPGs. If you like action JRPGs and it takes you all the way back to your days of playing Quest 64, then you might actually enjoy Tales of Arise. One that I will say that is actually pretty good, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 cross-gen bundle is $24.99 if you want to play that now. If not, I would hold out for about a year and see what happens with the Activision Blizzard deal, because I can imagine that that will definitely be brought to Game Pass as well. And for some reason, if you're like me and you still haven't played the Tomb Raider games, the Survival Trilogy is available for $20. There's plenty of other games that are on this deal. These are just some of the big titles that you've probably been keeping an eye out for to see when they do go on sale, and I always recommend that. If it's not on Game Pass, pick it up on a deal. You're not missing anything by not being in the zeitgeist when the game comes out for the conversation. You can still participate that, consume it, and then decide if it's something you want to pick up then. Otherwise, you can do what I do and just play games super, super late. If you guys were having any more interest in the Psychonauts 2 Collector's Edition that's going to be made available, that is going through 8-bit, or I am 8-bit. .com. It's $129.99. You can still pre-order that now for PS4 or for Xbox. It comes with, a whole bunch. It has a lenticular sleeve for the actual game case, premium die cut sticker pack, a 6 art card, a digital code for an exclusive behind the scenes development concepts. There's a collector's edition with a reversible cover sheet. It has an exclusive disc release for this collector's edition, so you can actually get the physical copy of it. There's a download code for volumes 1, 2, and 3 for Psychonauts 2 digital soundtrack, an exclusive 5-pin set of the Feast of the Senses, which I'm not familiar with. There's also a 18x24-inch black light poster of Raz, if you still have black lights, because you still live in Hot Topic. There's also an exclusive poster of Raz archetype from Psychonauts 2 by Chris Lamb, an extra sticker sheet, and a beautiful exclusive collector's box. These are region wide, so it doesn't matter which version you pick up. And I Am 8-Bit is definitely on the higher end of physical editions compared to, I am blanking on what's the other company that does all the physical editions, but they never do Xbox ones and they're just barely getting into it. I'm struggling to remember right now, so forgive me for that. If you remember it, definitely let me know. I for some reason I just can't remember. I'm not sure what it is. But they've been doing physical editions for Switch titles for a long, long time, especially like Doki Doki Literature Club Plus, as well as Snake Pass. I think they did Cooking Mama's game that was like the weird, like the game that should not exist. I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I can't remember what it is, but I'm sure you probably know because you're super smart and you're super. Oh, you're also beautiful too, by the way. So that was pretty much it as far as the news this week. It was a much lighter news week. A lot of the news, surprisingly, actually due to Sony and what Sony's been doing to try and catch up with some of the different services and offerings that Xbox has. Not to try and poke at Sony, I'm actually really glad that they're doing that because it at least helps kind of make sure that both ecosystems are being supported and that there isn't like it's kind of a tit for tat, but it's not really a tit for tat. It's just an offering. So take advantage of both. Don't sit there and be one of those console warriors that says that you have to prop up your Xbox over the PlayStation because Xbox is superior. They're the same, folks. It's all the same. And I'm sure you know that, and I'm sure you're not one of those people. So thank you. But with that, I think we're going to head out.